Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House concurrent resolution number 8 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Lewis. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. It is before the body. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House concurrent resolution be read a third time and finally passed. This resolution is the one that deals with the valuation of farmland. The State Tax Commission has suggested that it go up 8%. This would increase the taxes on farmland on classes 1 through 4. State Tax Commission actually has an agricultural land is handled different than commercial or residential, but the State Tax Commission every 2 years looks at this and actually suggests what the rates shall be set for these different classifications of land. We have class 1 through 8, and the State Tax Commission is suggesting that classes 1 through 4 be raised 8% this year. That's on evaluation. Class 1 through 4 is the better producing land that we have in the state. Class 5 through 8, of course, is the less productive. And agricultural land is based, the taxes are based on its productive capability. But this resolution would annul that rule that the State Tax Commission has put forward. And we have a certain timeline, meaning today, that we have to get this through to annul that rule. Now, there have been a lot of issues, and agriculture is the largest industry that we have in the state of Missouri. It really helps. I mean, it is the largest industry, and therefore it is our largest economic driver that we have in the state. Unfortunately, agriculture this last year has been faced with many difficulties, many challenges, and as we all know, a lot of disasters. From floods to too much rain, other than just floods, making our fields too wet. It also, last year, had droughts around the state that hampered the production of our crops here in Missouri. Also hurt our cattle production. As we look at the agricultural production in the state, a lot of counties did suffer last year. We had counties that were actually flooded and had huge devastation that actually should have changed some of the valuation or the classifications of their ground from a class 1. Maybe if it had a lot of sand piled on it, would have gone to a class 7. But those actually have to be requested by the individual landowner to the county assessor. And then they have the right to go out and look at that and readjust those classifications. And with that, Mr. President, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
The senator from Lewis has made his third read motion. Does any senator desire to be heard upon that? Senator from the first is seeking recognition. For what purpose?
Thank you, Mr. President. Can I inquire the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, would you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the first?
Yes. He would. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. I don't know if you were listening to the explanation of the concurrent resolution. I just had a couple of questions.
I think we need about 8 hours of questions on this one.
The unemployment rate in your district, like mine, and I guess, you know, pretty much across the state, was it a little over 8%?
That's what they say. I think it's higher than that.
What is it among construction workers?
About 30%.
30 to 40%. We just heard from the senator from Lewis that there was some flooding, there were droughts, there were other things that made the land less productive, meaning I guess that his constituents earned less off the land. So because of that, they should have lower property taxes. I was just curious in your area where there is 30% unemployment in the construction industry, if the taxes, property taxes for your constituents were adjusted, therefore.
No, they
weren't
were
adjusted
not.
Down?
No, they're still paying the higher tax rates.
Still paying the higher tax rates.
And they've increased those tax rates on the residential property several times since 1996.
Right. And the last time that this farmland property was changed was 1996, correct?
That is accurate.
1996.
2 years ago, the tax commission came out, and the senator from the first, or from Lewis can correct me, but I think it was 44% they wanted to increase, 39%, and then we did a resolution, I believe it was 2 years ago, to deny what the tax commission used some table to increase it, and here they are 2 years later saying, okay, you turned us down on 39%. Here 2 years later, we're saying 8%, and we're doing a resolution.
Right. And again, I know we changed the formula a number of years ago, but, boy, if you look at, I know the districts that are in the first, the school districts that are in the first, their percentage of funding that comes from the state is still based on your local property tax and your local
participation. Is what they like to say.
Right?
Yes. You and I probably have school districts that get probably 30-35% of their funding from the state. They probably do 65-70% of their funding, and you have a few hold harmless. I think you're up to
I've got Lindbergh that gets about 8% from the state.
Yeah, so about 92% comes from local participation.
Less than that. And, yeah, I just, again,
there's that other argument we still have to deal with as well. I do not have any of those school districts, but the hold harmless issue. I was here in the 90s when they instituted the hold harmless in all those school districts, some from South County and some from southwestern part of the county, would come up here and say, we need that change because we're not getting any increases. And now when it's decrease time, everyone's stepping up and saying they don't need to be held harmless. They need to be treated like everyone else. I do not have any of those school districts that were hold harmless, but I do not feel watching legislation passed the last 20 years, you tell them they're hold harmless when the revenues increase, and then when they decrease, you tell them, oh, by the way, you're not held harmless. I don't think that's fair.
Right.
And then I see issues like this, that they want to pass a resolution to a tax commission, which is independent of the legislature by statute, to come up with these assessment rates so that everyone is treated fairly and accordingly, and then we pass resolutions that say no. I wish I had the newspaper article, but there was a recent newspaper article that farming had a good year this year, actually.
Right.
Even though there was some disasters in southwest Missouri and southeast Missouri and northwest Missouri with the flooding, I have had farmers and I have read articles that the farming industry was one of the bright spots in the economy this year.
And I think it should be pointed out, and we serve on appropriations together. I mean, we're looking for ways to find savings in other parts of the budget so that we can get as much funding to K through 12 education as possible within the formula. Okay, so that's senators from the urban areas, okay, where in our area we've got a certificate of value, right? So,
right.
You know, our property taxes, you know, are pretty true, you know, to where they should be because of that. Okay, but we're fighting on behalf of all the other senators that are in this body to get more funding into K through 12 education that really benefits our districts, a lot less than it does the rural districts.
I think several weeks ago, and this being my last year, we were all invited to meet with our school boards in the St. Louis City and St. Louis County metropolitan area. None of us talked really on any of the issues facing all of the school districts, but it was, to me, it was a very welcome discussion to see all of us, not even discussing the issue, had the same frustrations. Some of us, like myself, being here 20 years, some of us being here 2 years, they all understood the process and where the urban school districts and what they're facing right now. In that discussion, always being pushed off to another year. The value issue was an issue we brought up on this floor back when the foundation formula was redone, I believe, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Help me on that.
I think it's about three.
And actually, our Regional Chamber of Commerce and Growth Association brought the amendment to myself to promote on the Senate floor, and it was turned down, but I had said at that time, we need to face up to this issue when we're dealing with the funding of school districts throughout the state, because you cannot put all the burden on certain communities throughout the state continuously.
Yeah, we're looking for a little equity.
The individual I represent and the individual you represent has a problem paying taxes, just like the individuals in Northeast Missouri and the individuals in Southeast, Northwest, Southwest, and even in the urban areas and even in the Central Missouri. We're no different than anybody else. Our citizens are having difficulty paying their property taxes as well. So the idea that because we're from the urban area that we can afford the assessment to ourselves to help fund our schools is not a fair, not using the pun, but assessment. It's just not fair. And there is frustrations that's been building up. And I think that's why you're seeing the debate of the school district in some of those issues with the foundation formula not being brought forth yet, because there's a lot of problems. And I think the urban areas are tired of saying, we're going to sit back and just let it continue. And this is one example right here of dealing with the assessment issue. It's a big issue. Everybody's got to start paying their fair share.
Yeah, and our districts and our constituents are carrying an uneven and unfair burden of the load.
And this issue and this resolution continues that path.
Right.
And it's not right. How can you honestly say the tax commission, which is a separate entity, comes up with a 39%? We pass a resolution and say, no, that's not fair. 2 years later, comes back and says, okay, 8%. And they haven't been increased since 1996. And we're saying, that's not fair. Well, citizens from North St. Louis County and the citizens from South St. Louis County are saying, yeah, it's not fair to us either.
Right.
And I represent farmers, and I believe you represent farmers as well. I have a lot of floodplain in North St. Louis.
Senator
from 15th always says North. But North St. Louis County, I have a lot of floodplain along the Missouri River and along the Mississippi River, and I have a lot of farmers in my district as well.
I think I might have a few down in Oakville.
Yeah. Actually, that was my first job working on a farm. You want to talk about my first job working on a farm so that they know that the Farm Bureau knows that I have sympathies for the farmer?
I always enjoy your story, Senator.
First job I had was working on a produce farm, picking tomatoes and planting tomatoes. Dollar and a quarter an hour. That was before I got involved in the labor movement. But you bring up a valid point.
All right.
And I'm sure there's a lot of other St. Louis County delegation that would like to discuss this issue as well, that we shouldn't possibly hold the floor, because if we could have the discussion we had with our school board members about 3 weeks ago, I think that discussion, here's the opportunity to start bringing it forward right now.
Well, I appreciate the inquiry. Maybe some of our other colleagues from...
I think I have received a few nods that a few of the other ones are anxious.
Make some comments.
Talking about their region as well.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 24th, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Oh, I guess to inquire of the senator from St. Louis City.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Interesting conversation our colleagues had, and I think a lot of what they discussed are similar to what Senator Schmidt and Senator from the 15th and I discussed last year with this equity in the funding formula. But, you know, I kind of come at this maybe from a different angle, too, in that the system that seems to be in place by which this group values the farm properties. I mean, clearly something's wrong with that system. The amount of volatility that they're trying to introduce. I mean, to have them 2 years ago suggest a 39% increase, you know, over. Granted, it's an increase on a number that hasn't been increased since 1996. But to me, if I'm a farmer and it's 2009 and I know what my assessed valuation is, and then the very next year, if by chance it were to go up 39%, I think that'd be an extraordinarily difficult reality to have to contend with. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree with that completely. I experienced that personally myself. I bought a home in the neighborhood in 1980. My first mortgage actually was 17%. So interest rates were through the roof. The neighborhood wasn't so good. The loop hadn't even been created yet. The neighborhood came back. Now it's a thriving neighborhood. And every 2 years, the taxes, the assessed value goes up.
But was it 39%? I mean, did you ever have to deal with that?
Not in one period. Not in one period. Over a period of time, easily.
Right. I guess, my concern is, I think that we probably have both experienced during the bull market in residential properties, 8% increase, one assessed valuation to the next assessed valuation. 8% is something we did experience. Quite frankly, up until this very last assessment period, we had continued to experience that kind of thing. And even for, a suburban house owner to have to somehow anticipate that their property taxes would go up by 8 or 10 or 12% in any given cycle is a very difficult thing to do.
It's painful. It's painful. And in order, people really have to make a sacrifice, yeah, to recover from that.
Kind of the concerns I have now in this situation, as our colleague suggested, it seems very reasonable that their assessed valuations would go up 8%, after 15 years or so. That seems very reasonable. But nonetheless, I think the system that's in place today, I don't know, how did this come to be? Do we have the ability to change the system, or is that something they do on their own, or how does it work,
Well, and I think that's the part that bothers me the most about this. I think we have a very equitable system in place. We have a board that offers their recommendation over some discussion that keeps the politics out of it. And then it cuts, and then after all that process, we inject the politics.
But don't you think maybe, in some respects, we might have given them too much power to the extent that they could actually put forward a proposed increase of 39% in any given cycle? There's a side of me that thinks that it's great that they do it the way they do it, and to the extent that we have some kind of legislative oversight of them coming to be, it might make greater sense for us to suggest to them, look, keep doing what you're doing. You have the power and authority, discretion to make these recommendations, but maybe we put a cap on, any biennial period that maybe they can't have it go up more than 5% or 8% or 10%, some number. Because clearly, again, what's not a contention today is whether or not 8% is reasonable or is unreasonable. Clearly, the 39% number of 2 years ago was extraordinary in that a farmer couldn't plan for that kind of increase, and for to give that board the ability to even recommend such a high increase, do you think maybe we should look at that between now and the next time they do it and try to put a limitation as to what that increase can be?
Well, I wouldn't mind taking a look at that, but if we're going to look at that, we're going to have to severely limit the power of the legislature to override their recommendation.
So in exchange for it, if we said, look, we'll follow your recommendation to the extent that it, in a two-year period it's never more than a 5% increase, in exchange for us not having to approve?
Or it takes a
three-quarter majority or something like that. To me, if I'm a farmer, I probably want to see that type of reform occur. Because there's something else that's going on. I didn't grow up on a farm, as many of us here did, but I had, actually, ironically enough, I had a lot of my family members own property in Jefferson County growing up, so we used to go to the farm all the time. And I'm old enough to where getting out, and in addition to that, we'd go to Pacific. There's a bunch of, my family built St. Joseph's Hospital, which is in Pacific, Missouri, and my grandfather and his brothers. And as a result of that, they all bought property in Pacific, and that was back when you take 66 to get out there. So it was country. It's not country now. But, I think the ability of farmers to be able to plan from you know, year after year to try to understand what their assessed value is going to be is an issue. Now, my point I was going to make is the farmers I know will all tell you that it's a tough, tough life,
sure,
and they're dirt poor while they're doing it, and they've got to deal with all the things our farmers had to deal with this last year, and floods and wind and all these things. And but then they all kind of smile at you and say, we're dirt poor our whole lives, and we die rich because we've got great farmland, and to the extent that farmland goes up in value. There's a new component to the life experience of farmers just in the last 5 or 10 years. And this is a group of people that I know a little bit, and I know what's happened these last 5 years is you've seen a huge influx of capital going to primarily hedge funds, which the hedge fund people have gone out into the farming communities and started to drive up the price of farmland.
Farmland.
Dramatically. So my big concern for farmers, if this commission continues to have this power and authority to set a 39% price increase, that the day may come where if this continues, I mean, I know that some of the senators that were quoting me were some recent, the top grade of farmland where it has started to trade, you know, traded at $9,000 an acre, which a farmer will tell you, I can't make money at $9,000. And then it trades at $11,000 an acre, and they say, I can't make money. And then it trades at $13,000 an acre, and they say, I can't farm land at $13,000 an acre and make money. Well, my concern for the farming community would be this continues because it's hedge fund people buying up the land, and somewhere along the way that commission says, you know what, this top farmland is at $20,000 an acre. We can't keep it at 1996 prices. We've got to adjust it higher to at least get closer. Maybe they come back one of these years and they say we need a 50 or 75% increase. And maybe that increase itself is even after the increase, it reflects less than half of the market value. And suddenly, that's where the assessed values are. And then farmland has happened to it what we know has happened to other all the other forms of real estate in the last 5 years, which is the bubble burst and collapses, and then suddenly they're overassessed. The assessed value of their properties are over the market value. The commission can't adjust quickly enough, and we have a similar situation we have right now in St. Louis County. So that's the concern I have for these farmers.
You know, it used to be when I first... I used to work for a commodities futures firm, so I was very close to the agricultural markets. It used to be farmland was valued at a farmland valuation was a function of the price of the crops. Soybeans go from $8 to $18, the price of the farmland goes up. Soybeans drop, the price of the farmland goes down. Now we've got hedge funds, which have only been around probably 15 or 20 years.
All these things are interrelated because what's going on is, you know, we as a country have this zero interest rate policy, okay? So what that means is that financial institutions could go out and borrow money for close to zero. Well, two things. First of all, zero interest rate policy is what causes the dramatic depreciation of our currency. To the extent that all of our, you know, grains and things that are produced on farm are priced on dollars in the world market, that drives the higher price for all those, you know, all the grains and corn, all the things. You know, farmers will tell you that they've never seen higher prices. And there's some, to some extent, it has to do with, you know, just the global economy's become easier to trade in, and you've got demand for products out of parts of the world that you didn't have before. But a bigger part of that is just the very fact that the dollar's depreciated so much, it's made all of these other commodities in dollars priced at a much higher level. So that drives up the price. So it's ironic that zero interest rate policy is what drives grain prices higher, which then somehow, I mean, some farmers would say, maybe at $8,000 or $9,000 or $10,000 an acre, I can kind of make money as long as those prices stay there. And it's all interrelated because the reasons that the hedge funds can turn around and go out and buy the farmland at $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 an acre is because they can borrow close so that they're going to leverage their capital.
Right.
You know, they might get $10, $10, $50, $100 million of equity, and they'll turn around and leverage it at 4, 5, or 10 to 1, and they'll take that borrowed money at zero, and they'll go out and they'll drive those prices higher. And this caused the residential housing crisis is a series of very complicated things. But what didn't necessarily happen was that you had institutional investors work to drive those prices higher, because you couldn't buy one individual property at a time. But with farmland, you can. And again, I've got good friends of mine. They farm out of Pittsfield, Illinois. It's just across from Louisiana. And, you know, they started reporting back to me 2 or 3 years ago that farmland was starting to trade at prices that a farmer could never make money on it. And then ultimately this money was coming out of Chicago, was coming out of these institutions. And so, you know, get back to this power that this commission has to set an increase in its assessed valuation. I think, and I don't know if you saw, if you had the good fortune to have the San Luis County assessor stop by your office yesterday.
I did not. No, I did not.
So I did. I always enjoy his company.
But he did catch me out there.
You know. Okay, well, very good. Well, he and I had a, you know,
he was my roommate last year.
Oh, very good. Very good. So, you know, when he won that office, I actually went out of my way right as he was taking over that office to sit down with him, and I knew he was familiar with the funding formula, and we had a good conversation about we need to somehow sync up, like equalize, you know, how St. Louis County values properties and how even neighboring Collier counties value properties, Jefferson County, St. Charles County, and how it really does distort the funding formula. So, but anyway, so, you know, it was great for him to come by and visit and catch up. But, you know, if and his office has the power to assess, they've got to make sense of their assessments. But I can't imagine if coming out of that office were 35% or 39% increases. It would
be devastating. No. And now it's an elected office. That's right. Not going to be a popular thing with your populace. The population.
And hope maybe that's what we lacked in St. Louis County, that a lot of the other county assessors are elected, so they hold themselves, you know, accountable in each election cycle. But still, I'm thinking of this. I don't think I have too many farmers in my district.
Oh.
The farmers I have probably are farming something illegal under their house or something. But I still am coming at this from their perspective. You know, I think that this volatility in this assessment is something that we're not, by allowing that potentiality to occur, I think maybe we're overlooking where they might be on this issue.
I would agree with that. I mean, even back to the old model before hedge funds, to take some of the, I mean, as you well know, the commodities market are extremely volatile. So
right.
if it's based on a function of the price of crops, we don't want the farmers to have to go through that.
I mean, so far they've had zero volatility. It's been the same price, right? So
right.
It's the same assessed value for 15 years, and so maybe they might counter by saying, well, look, there's no volatility. But I just have to assume that somewhere along the way that the public will come to further understand the fact that how we value our personal property, our residential property, commercial property, farming property, it's a big part of how we decide to allocate those monies that we have available to us specific to K-12 education. And I have to imagine at some point in time, even this idea that St. Louis County and Jackson County has a different assessment process than do other counties, I think very slowly the public's coming to understand that. But I think at some point it's logical to assume that the public may start to very much appreciate that and ask that there be equalization amongst the process of assessment. But, you know, in addition to that train of thought, though, is this idea the public might come to understand the fact that, you know, we're assessing farming prices going back 15, 16, to the extent that this doesn't happen this year. It could be 20, 25 years before a reassessment occurs, and then I'm afraid that it could put the farming community in a really dangerous spot, and that they would, you know, there'd be a lot of political will to sync up farm prices after a 20-year period.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like everything else, when you hold the pendulum back, when it finally swings, it probably swings
yeah,
too far the other way.
Yeah, too far.
So, yeah,
yeah.
If you can get some kind of equity and avoid that huge pendulum swing.
Yeah.
I think that would be in everybody's best interest.
I mean, if it were to occur that, you know, this increase were to take place where, you know, their assessed valuation would increase 8% from 1996 assessments, I don't think, if that were to happen, I don't think that just should be the end of all this. I really do hope that we seriously consider, I guess it's every other year this happens, so we probably have next session to focus on this, to figure out a way to make sure that, like right now the volatility is zero, right? There's been no change. And so if we go 8% one time over 15 years, that's over 15 years, that's very little volatility too.
Right. Right.
But by the recommendation this commission made just 2 years ago, that 39% recommendation, it shows you the potential for extreme volatility. And I hope we figure out a way to maybe cap it to where it's, you know, a reasonable, never more than 2% over 2 years or some number. But I think the farming community would very much appreciate having a greater sense of certainty of what that increase could ultimately be.
Without belaboring it too much with you, but am I hearing you right? I've got a free market Republican advocating for caps.
Yeah, you know, that's true. I mean, there's something to that, and maybe that means I can leverage that conversation with something like, never should my residential real estate assessment go up more than 1% in any given year.
Okay.
If it were truly a free market and we had a process where every person that assesses every property, regardless of farming, residential, commercial, that every single assessor used exactly the same process and that the assessed values most accurately reflected the actual market prices, so this is where a free market person would want to go towards. If that's a choice, yeah, I'll take that.
I would agree with that.
Now, the reason that I'm willing to consider as a free market person a cap on something is for me to suggest that we don't have that system. It's not a free market system. It's a system where, you know, 113 county assessors decide how they're going to assess the properties that they're asked to assess.
In their own specific county, not even statewide.
Using their own, you know, agreed upon determination and formula, and I think a lot of them would have a hard time suggesting to you that the numbers that they come up with adequate, you know, that actually reflect where the market is for that property. It's some other system. So given that we're not going to go to an entirely free market process, then the next best thing to do, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up actually, because maybe in conjunction with this, we can look at putting a similar cap onto residential properties and commercial properties, because you and I both know how hard it is to deal with those 5%, 10%, and 15% increases year over year.
Right, right. And I would be more than happy to have that discussion with anybody that wants to have it.
Good.
I think everybody really wants to pay their fair share. I would like to hope that everybody wants to pay their fair share. But
well, that's not a very good term to use. I think the fair share thing, you want to go talk about fair share, you're not going to get me to agree to fair share. That's an entirely different discussion. But I think that what is fair is to say, I agree as a citizen to allow you to assess the value of what I hold. And then by a vote of the people, and that's how it happens, right, at the local level, if you, as the local community wants to wrap a tax around the true market value of my property, then I'm okay with that. Unfortunately, I think that what we have is a complete distortion of how one person looks at a property and how it assesses its value to the next person, to the next person. And it would all be okay if it was something that just happened at the county level. But where the whole thing gets messed up is that you take all those combinations and all that data from all those individual assessment processes and you pull it back into the funding formula and you use those numbers to determine, it's not a fair share that they use in the language, it's the ability to pay, right?
Right.
It's the ability of a local community to fund properly an education for a K-12 student.
And the system that we have now, if you follow that same logic, it pretty much incentivizes counties to keep their assessed valuation.
And that would be okay if every county agreed to use the same system to underassess. I mean, It's interesting because if every single residential and commercial property holder, if their properties were being assessed at 1996 prices today, I mean in 2012, at least then it would be everybody be on the same platform. Only to the extent that they actually use the same process.
Right.
You know, so
right.
So that's not the system we find ourselves in. And you know, I guess what I'm suggesting with this idea about figuring out a way to decrease the volatility that farmers might experience is that until we get to the perfect system, that I think all of us that own property would appreciate the ability to control the year-over-year changes of our assessed valuation.
Well, or just to anticipate it,
yeah.
This is the worst case scenario. This is what I'm looking at. This is good. What I'm going to pay in tax or what I could possibly pay in tax could dictate what crop did I plant. Is it $2 corn? Well, I don't know. We haven't had $2 corn in quite some time. But, is it soybeans? Is it corn? Is it wheat? Whatever it is.
Right.
Or am I just leaving it fallow and put it in the CRP? But at least they can plan their business. That's their livelihood. And nobody wants to put anybody out of business. Everybody's trying to get, increased productivity, but people have to be able to plan.
Right. No, and the system that's in place now just doesn't allow for that. Well, look, I appreciate the inquiry. I'm going to inquire some other senators and get their thoughts, and thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 24th.
I'd like to inquire the senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th. Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thanks for the inquiry, Senator. Have you been listening to the conversation the Senator and I from the 4th were having?
I'm going to be completely honest. I didn't hear a lot of it because I've been engaged in some conversations on some other issues. What were the highlights?
Well, the Senator from the 4th is, an urban suburban. I'm an urban suburban senator. And so the natural inclination would be to think that we would have issue with the fact that, how we assess our property valuations and how that impacts funding formula, that would be the direction we might take on this resolution, given the fact that this process has not allowed for an increase in the assessed value of farmland since 1996. But that really wasn't so much what our focus was. Our focus was, if anything, from the perspective of farmers themselves. And you as a senator who might have that rare opportunity, if things hold, to represent urban, suburban, and rural all in one legislative career. I don't know if anybody else, I guess the senator from St. Louis City had that opportunity 10 or 15 years ago. But anyway, my concern is the farmers. My concern is that this system in place today allowed for the commission to put forward a 39% increase 2 years ago, which didn't go on, has allowed them to put forward a recommended 8% increase today. And I just think it's too much volatility. And we were talking about whether after this debate occurs, that maybe we can look at putting a cap on that, assessment. What do you think of that?
I think that makes complete sense. I actually, long before I ever even considered running for office, I was a student at the law school in Kansas City, and I took a legislation class, and that was my first real stab at drafting legislation. And we actually worked with our professor, who's now the Secretary of State in Kansas, Chris Kobach, and drafted some legislation that was similar for the Kansas side, so that there can be some predictability, frankly, Senator, as far as what folks can expect. A yearly cap seems to make sense. Now, we can't do that, I guess, because this is a House concurrent resolution.
Right.
This wouldn't be something we could do here today, but there's no reason why we couldn't talk about that moving forward.
So what did that Kansas legislation end up looking like? Did it kind of give a check to that commission to... Is it a cap to the annual increase?
I don't remember, Senator, that Kansas had the situation where they would make a recommendation and then the legislature had it in their hands to actually vote on it one way or the other. It seemed to me that the county folks had a lot to do with what was going on in Kansas at the time, and the Kansas legislature, and I never heard whether it passed or not, but the bill that we drafted basically just put in a cap for all property tax issues, whether it be commercial, agriculture, personal, so that people could have some predictability from year to year.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to come to learn about the tremendous disparity is not the word I'm looking for, but just the fact that, you know, all 113 counties can choose to assess property however they see fit. There's no statewide one single process. They can all decide to, you know, assess residential property, commercial property, in this instance, farming property. A different body decides how to assess the valuation of farm property. And then we take all of that information and data and pull it into a funding formula discussion that assumes that it all is equal in meaning. And, there's just so many flaws in this process. And I think at the end of the day, the people that are hurt the most by all these flaws are our citizens, actually.
Absolutely. The one question that I didn't quite understand, and as this was presented over the last few weeks, was it my understanding, and did you hear this as well, that the original recommendation was for something much higher than 8%? Was it?
Well, what it was is 2 years ago, it was recommended that the assessment go up 39%.
Okay.
And that's when I talk about volatility. That's the thing that scares me. If I'm a farmer, the fact that my assessed valuation could go, you know, think about it. So in 2009, my assessed valuation is what it is, you know, whatever the 1996 valuation is. And then the next year, it's going to go up by 39% if that recommendation were to actually happen. That, to me, that's not putting their interests, you know, first and foremost.
Yeah, that to me seems to be a volatility that I would not want. And then the other thing I didn't really understand was the issue of the different classifications. This House concurrent resolution that's in front of us today, which classifications does this cover?
Well, it's specific to the first four classifications. I guess there are eight or nine. I'm not sure the total number. But another part of the conversation I had with Senator from the fourth concerned, a new participant in that arena, that the most productive, those first, especially I think the first two classifications of the most productive, the most fertile land, there's been a big influx of new buyers, and it's coming from hedge funds. So it started about 3 or 4 years ago. You know, there's this combination of the zero interest rate policy, which drives to lower the value of our dollar on the global markets. That's a big part of what drives the price of the things that are produced on farms, you know, grain and soy and all that. They're driving those to record prices because of the zero interest rate policy. The zero interest rate policy allows hedge funds to borrow money almost at zero and then to leverage their equity capital 3 and 4 and 5 and 10 fold and then go out and start buying up, in particular, these first two levels of the most, you know, productive farmland and driving the prices higher.
That's really interesting. I hadn't heard that. And so, I mean, we're not exactly talking about then farmland that's owned by what we would typically think as just kind of the husband and wife farming team. They've been working on a small farm for years. We're talking about a lot bigger.
And think of the challenges is that the family farmer. Okay, so the family farmer, and you'll talk to them and they'll tell you, oh my God, I heard property sold for $8,000 an acre or $9,000 or $13,000 an acre. And I have friends of mine that are family farmers in Pittsfield. And property started changing hands 3 or 4 years ago in their part of the world where they, you know, this is a third generation, they look at each other and say, we can't make a profit at that price per acre. What's causing this to happen? And what's causing this to happen are these institutional buyers. Institutional buyers like this, they're willing to pay $9,000, $10,000, $11,000 an acre because they're looking to sell it at $15,000, $18,000, and $20,000 an acre. They're not doing it because they think it's going to be a productive thing. They're doing it because they think they can just drive the prices higher. My concern for the farmers is that that goes on much longer than one would hope. And that at the end of the day, maybe a property that in 2002 was at $6,000 an acre, maybe by 2018 is trading at $25,000 an acre. And at that point, this commission says, wait a second, we're at 1996 prices. We've gone from $2,000 an acre to $25,000 an acre. We've got to reassess this at $12,000 or $13,000 or $14,000 an acre. That happens, the assessment goes up, and then the whole thing collapses just like what happened in residential and commercial real estate. So, I mean, I'm really concerned for that happening.
Well, it sounds to me like we need to sit down and take a holistic view of how all of these things connect. I mean, we're not just talking about, you know, the volatility and the unpredictability of the farmers who are dealing with this, but we're also talking about funding for our foundation formula and others, and it seems to me that it's time we have a really grown-up conversation about what we can do moving forward so that we don't have this sort of thing going on. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, to me, there are a lot of, I mean, our job, first and foremost here, is to protect the citizens of Missouri, to put them in a situation where they can just manage their lives day to day, year to year, and to decrease the uncertainty in their lives to the greatest extent possible. I mean, you can't make bad things go away, but what you can do is you can lay out a foundation of process that they know they can plan their lives around. And, you know, I'm of the school that, you know, the less we do, the less involved we are, the easier to understand the process. You know, I think that all those people in the state of Missouri that pay property taxes, if they came to understand all the different methodologies that are used and how they're not in sync and how they're so different, and then if they also came to understand how that, you know, almost directly impacts what goes on with those parts of government that they're most willing to support, things like K through 12 education, I think they'd come down here and tell us that we're not doing our job.
I think I agree with you, Senator, and you pointed out that I am going to be in a unique situation if these current maps hold moving forward. I will be in a situation where, frankly, the folks that elected me, who sent me to this body, might be opposed to an elimination or I guess a waiving of this tax increase. But the folks that I'm going to represent possibly next year might be in favor of it. And so I'm going to be in kind of a unique situation, and I'm glad that you're bringing this up because it's something that I'd like to keep my eyes on over the next 2 years and participate in that process. I think that ultimately it's probably something that we need to look at statewide and see how we can all work together to do the most equitable process possible.
Senator, I appreciate the inquiry. I'm going to sit down. I've just about said everything I had to say at least twice. And there are a few people still here, so I'm going to sit down and see if other of our colleagues have interest in weighing in on this this concept.
Sounds good. Thanks, Senator.
We're on the motion of the Senator from Lewis. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you seek recognition? Senator from the 13th is not in the chamber. Senator from the 13th.
Yeah, Mr. President, I'd like to inquire the Senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, do you yield the Senator from the 15th?
Yes, I do, happily.
He yields, Senator. You may proceed.
I would deem it an honor, Mr. President.
We had an inquiry this year yet, you and I?
Very briefly, I think early on.
Was it related to the Commerce Clause in any way?
Commerce Clause hasn't come up, nor has the Northwest Ordinance.
One of the things that I wanted to follow up on...
that was pretty good. We locked him in.
Yeah. Senator from Polk is wanting to do something here. And
he needs to do a quorum call or something, right, to get, you know, all that or whatever.
Right, introduction of a guest or something. Right.
I get the issue. And you know, the reason I want to just kind of say this is I'm always happy to help my colleagues about something that they feel passionate about. And I would just say, you, in the manner that you have been in the Senate, have earned that, you know, because I respect the issue involved here, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, this is one of these things where I think there's probably a lot of disagreement about this issue, quite frankly. And it's genuine disagreement, and it transcends party, you know, and it goes to that kind of thing. But I just hope some people, I hope who have been up in this debate, realize that, you know, this is why you don't have the Senate do a lot of stuff and get a lot of stuff done right away.
Yeah, and I'm
just telling you, this is a real serious issue.
Right.
And you and the Senator from 24th last year genuinely brought up the same thing that maybe the Senator from 13th and I have years ago and the Senator from 10th, which is, with all due respect, and I'm term limited and I can say this, you know, I hear all the, and you're going to probably regret, but I'm going to just speak real frankly. You know, we're involved in all these genuine discussions about prevailing wage and all this other stuff, and I'll just tell you, it's all connected. You know, I hear this stuff from people in these discussions, and I'll just tell you about them because it deals with what we're dealing with. Are you wanting to, what, are you trying to end the inquiry already?
No. I was going to ask a question offline here, but I didn't know the
answer. I just want you to, because there's a genuine thing, which is the reality of this state is there's a balance and there's a partnership, and we're all part of the same state. And there's some things that people do in the cities and some people do in the suburbs, and guess what? There's a balance there. There's not as much money in rural Missouri.
Right.
And you try to create this balance, and sometimes there's imbalances in that system. But I hear all this stuff about prevailing wage and, we have to pay this rate, and I'm sure that's a genuine problem, and I'm sure we can get to it. But the reality is when I hear, we're having to pay this thing, they don't realize you and I in the suburbs and the center from 10th, we're sometimes the economic engine. And we help pay for those schools in rural Missouri. And I got news for you. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
Because that's what being a taxpayer and resident of Missouri, because I understand there's balance and there's always going to be unfairness and there's always going to be things like that because we're all part of the same state.
Right.
And guess what? Take it beyond that. We're all part of the same country.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to go off like that, but I just wanted to tell you, I get completely the issue coming from Independence, Missouri, that, suburbs, we're on the verge of being held harmless. We're, we're in whatever little dot in Don Thalhuber's office. I don't know where my school district is at. But I get the whole thing because I've talked to the Center from 13th for years. The suburbs and the cities help subsidize rural Missouri. I got news for you. I have no problem with that. Good. If it means that more kids get educated, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And so, look, you guys have identified there are probably genuine problems with how rural Missouri handles taxes compared to how suburbs handle taxes. You and I, as taxpayers back home, at a certain point, we don't have a lot of say about whether our taxes go up or down. Right? We can go as voters sometimes and turn down something, but you had a bill, your first bill that you ever called me about was about electing it, because you were trying to address a problem of maybe something that had gotten out of hand or how the county was handling things. I don't know all the issues. We had a different experience in Jackson County. But I didn't want to ramble, but I didn't want this opportunity to miss. I want people to understand this is one of these disputes in the Senate. This is why you have a Senate.
Well,
it's not a partisan body. Right. There's a genuine disagreement and agreement that transcends party.
And I also want to make clear that just because somebody stands up on a bill and asks questions,
right,
doesn't mean they're trying to kill a bill.
Right.
And I think, sometimes there is a culture here where we're looking for somebody to blame on something, and if somebody stands up and has some questions that they're trying to kill and all the parade of terribles that follow. I'm not trying. I just have some genuine questions about how we do this. And piggybacking on the Center from the 24th, I have a concern as somebody that comes from a family of farmers a couple generations ago, as a guy who lives in suburbia. Now, the Center from Polk's Head turned around so fast when I said that. But everybody likes to pigeonhole you. Oh, you're a city guy. Or you're a rural guy.
No.
But you know what? All this stuff works together, and I don't think it's fair for the farmers to every 2 years have to deal and fight, if they think it's unfair, a 37% increase or a 44% increase. And why? Why is that? Can we deal with some of those root issues? Is it because we don't have a predictable system? We don't have something that's fair. We have a system right now that deals with it every 2 years. It's a tax commission. And does that mean because somebody asked questions about it that they're trying to I think because what the Center from the 24th started to touch on is, look, and this is unrelated but related, hold harmless districts out there, you're never going to get any new money, never going to get cut, so what happens is, if you're never going to get any new money from the state, the only way you're going to build a building, the only way you're going to hire new teachers, the only way you're going to reduce the classroom size is to go to local taxpayers and ask them for more, And the community that I represent usually says yes, But what that means is 93% of those dollars that are spent for a kid in Kirkwood come from local taxpayers. About $300 comes from the state, And now, here we are at the end of the phase-in,
And what is the ask? $60 million from districts that have never gotten any new money to districts that have gotten money through the phase-in. I think that's incredibly unfair. And I think it's what we do here is we pick something we don't like or that there's votes on, and we say we're going to isolate that as the fix. Well, what about dealing with issues like the dollar value modifier, the small school fund? I mean, all these sorts of things that play into the formula that we got to have a comprehensive view of this thing. And what we do is we throw something out here and then we do something here. When are we going to deal with this issue about assessments statewide? When are we going to deal with the formula? Well, we can't do that this year. We don't have time. Well, when is the time? 3 years ago, I was on this floor. We were talking about the super hold harmless deal. Well, we just do it this year, okay? We'll deal with the formula issue later. Well, here we are. And so I'm not trying to pull the formula debate into this, but I got news for you. The bill that the senator from Johnson has is fatally flawed. Fatally flawed. And until we have an issue or a frank discussion on how we can look at the formula in its entirety, that bill is going to have a really hard time.
Now, the formula is very appropriate to this debate because what my point is, this is all connected. It's all connected.
Yep.
It's part of being a state. Rural has a different balance than suburban. Urban does different things to that. They all have different needs.
Well, and I got to tell you, I have one, Kirkwood School District, my home school, North Glendale, is out on the Grand Staircase. It's the school where my kids will go to school. So I'm going to go get my picture taken.
Okay.
And I don't know what's going to happen out here, if there are any more questions or there's not. I'm not trying to kill. I just think
at
some point we got to talk about this stuff. And, you know, whether this is the right number, whether it should be zero, whether it should be higher, I think people just got to, we got to have an earnest discussion, because if the Senate doesn't talk about this stuff, nobody's going to talk about this stuff.
So. Right. And that's my point. But I think it's a genuine inquiry to have that we really don't have when we have these resolutions that just turn down something.
Right.
We don't get to the core issues. We don't get to the mechanical part, the contraption that is creating this problem.
Right.
So, anyway.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
We're on the motion of the senator from Lewis. Does any other senator wish to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize close.
Mr. President, I close.